Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
What an eventful day in baseball. Welcome to the show on Thursday, May 16th. A lot happened yesterday. Chris Archer was really, really bad. We had another call-up. Willie Calhoun is up, and he homered. Austin Riley homered in his major league debut. Yu Darvish. It had a good start, not a quality start, but it was a good start. So much happened that we need a third person. Scott and I could not possibly do this show by ourselves. You all remember Heath Cummings. Welcome back. Oh, I can't believe I didn't cue up the music. I am sorry. I can't believe it. Just give me a second, Heath. Welcome back.
I, too, am really shocked that you had an excellent opportunity for a music drop and forgot to do it.
Oh, well, we missed you, man. It's good to have you back.
It's great to be back and ready to talk some baseball.
Okay, great. Scott, welcome back to you as well.
Welcome back.
It was a pretty busy day, huh? A lot of stuff. You could talk, Scott.
Oh, no, there's a lot of stuff. Yeah. I didn't know you were turning to me for that.
Okay,
yes,
listen.
There were things that happened on a 16-game Wednesday.
Was it 16?
And I'm happy to talk about them. Let's do it.
I think it was
16 games, doubleheader.
Yeah, Indians,
double dipper.
Indians did not play yesterday. I think there were two teams that were off.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
15. Just 15. Games. Sorry.
Okay, so let's start with some more prospects. So Scott writes about the prospects every week. You haven't had a chance to weigh in on no Austin Riley. Oh, I don't think you talked about Keston Hira on the show. Riley's now 60% owned. He homered yesterday. Willie Calhoun is only 12% owned. He went 2-for-5 with a home run. What do you make of all this madness with all these call-ups lately?
I think it's obviously a good thing, an exciting thing. And most of them are the kind, well, not most of them, but I think definitely Hira and Austin Riley are the kind that every fantasy owner should be interested in. They were the ones I know I went to the computer and put in claims for really fast and didn't win all of them because others were interested too. But Austin Riley got a 70 grade power rating from Baseball America, which was the same that they gave Pete Alonso entering this year. Has always been a good power prospect and has cut down on his strikeouts significantly at AAA this year. So I think there's a good chance he sticks around as the Braves left fielder with Ender and Ciarte not really securing his job. And then Hira, I mean, same thing with Travis Shaw. It's just been a disaster out there. So if Hira hits like he's supposed to, expect him to stick around too. Second base, obviously a big position of need, but in Riley's case, he's going to have the dual eligibility soon, third base and outfield. So they're both very exciting. Calhoun, has had a nice rebound season at AAA this year after things inexplicably went wrong for him last year, stopped hitting home runs. He's generally been a good in terms of not striking out, and that seems like a good combination for fantasy success, but he's so limited defensively that how often are they going to be able to play him? That's hard to say. And just plus the fact that he's failed in the majors in the past. It's already used up his rookie eligibility, technically not a prospect anymore because of that. But it makes him less exciting just by virtue of, okay, we've seen this before. What is he honestly going to do for me, though? And I think it's a fair question because to get him in the lineup, it seems like they have to get one of Hunter Pence, who seems like the most likely candidate. Hunter Pence, Shinsu Chu, Joey Gallo, Nomar Mazara, one of them has to be out to let Willie Calhoun in. So I think the best case scenario is a Calhoun and Pence platoon, but we'll see.
Heath, I don't really know what I'm allowed to ask you today. Like, what are you prepared to talk about after being out for a week?
You can ask me whatever you like. You can ask me to rank these prospects with Nicky Lopez, because I don't know if we talked about Nicky Lopez yet.
We did. We talked about him yesterday, of course. I think I would forget Nicky Lopez, of course. I was shocked that you owned Nicky Lopez like a week ago. I talked about that on the show. It blew my mind. Sure, yeah. Rank the prospects, Heath. Let's get it from you.
I would go Riley, Hura, Lopez, Calhoun.
Okay, great. So, look, these guys are interesting. We just heard the breakdown on Calhoun, who DH'd yesterday. Hunter Pence did sit. He's 12% owned. He's clearly the most available. And, you know, later in the show, we'll talk about some guys that you might want to drop for these players. Like, is it time to drop Robinson Cano or Colton Wong? That's an easier one to probably drop. Let's talk about Wednesday standouts, and I got to start it with Gleyber Torres. Gleyber Torres, in one day, a doubleheader with three home runs, went from being the number 18 second baseman in fantasy to ninth in points and eighth in roto. He now has a .290 batting average with eight home runs. He's still dealing with an elbow injury. He says it hurts after he makes throws, so that's not good. He talked about how refreshed he felt after 2 days off. But here's the most amazing thing from Gleyber Torres. He is batting .543 with six home runs and three doubles in eight games against the Orioles. Versus everyone else, he has two home runs and seven doubles in 32 games. The Orioles have one of the worst pitching staffs we've ever seen. They are going to give up more home runs than any team in baseball history. So how much does that impact your evaluation of Gleyber Torres?
I don't know that my evaluation of Gleyber Torres has really changed much. And he had a very good day yesterday, and he's a Yankee, so I'm glad that we're talking about him. But he was a borderline top 12 second baseman coming into the year. I kind of view him as a borderline top 12 second baseman now. There have been some ups and downs, but in the end, he looks a lot like what we expected.
Are you telling me that I should not have talked about Gleyber Torres? I'm only doing it because he's a Yankee?
I didn't say that at all. I don't know what gave you that impression.
Okay, Scott, let's talk about Cameron Maybin and DJ LeMahieu now. No, give me your thoughts on Gleyber Torres.
Yeah, this feels like kind of setting him back on track after maybe underachieving a little bit at this point, because now his home run to fly ball rate is about what it was last year. The BABIP isn't anything that would suggest he's overachieving greatly in terms of batting average. But he isn't such a good plate discipline guy, and that holds him back at a position, well, shortstop anyway, position that has a lot of high-end players. The fact that he is eligible at second base, I think keeps him must-own. When in shallower leagues, that may be a question otherwise.
Okay,
we can all agree, though, that Paul DeJong's better than Gleyber Torres now, right?
I'd rather have DeJong. But what about the Baltimore thing? Baltimore is like Coors Field of pitching staffs. He's done all of his damage
pitching
against Baltimore.
But you know, he's going to face bad pitchers on other teams, too. I'm sure that does help when he faces a bad pitcher.
All right. Yu Darvish. 5 1/3, 5 hits, 2 runs, no walks, 11 strikeouts. Apparently, he took a very, very long time in between pitches. He also featured his cutter more yesterday. He still only has one start of 6 innings this season. 2 starts next week for Yu Darvish, who was only started in 48% of leagues. So this good start was wasted for a lot of fantasy owners. Philadelphia and Cincinnati next week. How much faith do we have in Yu Darvish, Heath?
I don't think you can actually have faith that he's going to be good. This is encouraging if you've held on to him and it made you feel a little bit better. And maybe in a 2-start week, you don't necessarily have any better options, especially in a points league. But they're just one start where he strikes out 11 and walks 0 is not going to be enough when he's walked 11 in his last 8 innings before that start. This was a small step in the right direction. I'm going to need to see more.
Okay. You mentioned, Adam, that he threw his cutter and slider more in this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was something they've noticed, is that he seems to command those pitches better than the fastball. And, you know, so he changes that approach and 0 walk. There weren't many. There were only 11 swinging strikes for having 11 strikeouts. So it's, you know, that thing he was doing well when he wasn't doing well, he didn't do as well this time. But I mean, it is a step in the right direction. It's another indication that he is worth keeping on your roster, because the ceiling is still obviously high for him. But yeah, 2-start week after only one encouraging start. Only way I'd risk it is in a points league where, I don't know about you, but I personally, if I roster a guy in a points league and he's making 2 starts, I have a hard time sitting him ever, because I tend to only see the upside in that scenario. And not want to miss out on a potential 50-point week.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's pretty much how I feel. I'll probably be starting Darvish, and in points league. I just want to say something. I'm going to forget. Zach Gallen, I've seen added in a couple of my leagues. Marlins pitcher dominating the PCL. Scott, do we need to be picking up Zach Gallen before the promotion?
Yeah. And one of my regrets about this week is that in last week's prospects report, those who read it know I have a five on the verge and a five on the periphery. That's how I break it up. Just the five who are most worth stashing, and the five who, you know, just any five guys I want to write about. Those are the five on the periphery. So I had Hira and Riley in the five on the periphery last week because they were doing, you know, they both had seen their production go up a lot in recent games, but I didn't put them on my five on the verge. So now everybody had to spend a lot of fab buying them. I felt bad about that. Zach Gallen is, and has been for a couple weeks now, in my five on the verge, in the five to stash. And it's an interesting situation because he's not regarded as being this like uber prospect with great stuff. But after kind of solidifying his arm angle this season, his command has just been exceptional. And obviously the numbers have too. It seems like every start he goes seven innings, allows two hits. And in an environment where everybody playing fantasy baseball could use another starting pitcher, that seems like something to gamble on, even if he doesn't have that great pedigree, because it's going to happen sooner than later.
All right, so
guy in his mid-20s, a lot of openings in that rotation. It'll happen soon.
All right, Zach Gallen for the Marlins. If you could just rattle off some names, because we got a busy show. We got buy low, sell high, buy high. We have 15 games to talk about, not 16 games. It's weird that teams have Wednesdays off now. The new schedule is definitely different. But if you could just rattle off some names of the next wave of people, players that we need to be stashing right now, Yordan Alvarez would certainly be one of them. Zach Gallen, who else do we need to stash in prospect land?
Brendan Rodgers is actually priority two for me behind Alvarez now, who he's basically been Alvarez since the third week of the season. And, the fact that Trevor Story suffered a bruised knee yesterday only helps his path. Obviously, the Rockies could use some help at second base as well, and that's what Rodgers has been playing most. I think Jesus Luzardo is still worth stashing. He threw his first bullpen session yesterday. Seems like he's on the right track with his rehab assignment. And I think Kyle Tucker is worth stashing again, particularly in five outfielder leagues. He got off to a miserable start. But I don't think it's 100% sure that Alvarez beats him to the majors, considering Tucker doesn't have the defensive concerns Alvarez does, and he's already on the 40-man roster, Tucker is. So it would be a disappointment if he arrived before Alvarez, but, you know, if you're prepared for that scenario, it would be less of a disappointment.
All right. Alvarez and Tucker, Brendan Rodgers, Zach Gallen, and, of course, read Scott's story about prospects on the website. Heath, here's what you missed over the last week. Tommy La Stella got his groove back, and he homered again. And Scott kind of buys in, you know, like, I know he sits against lefties, but Chris and I are like, no.
Yeah.
Tommy La Stella stinks.
Buy-in is in terms of, like, what at second base with as much help as everybody needs. Why not, you know?
Yeah, well, he's a top four. He's fourth in Roto, sixth in points at second base. He's 12th in points, 7th in Roto at third base. So it gives you an idea of the depth of the position. Heath, how did Tommy La Stella get his groove back, and how funny am I for saying that?
It's good because there's a movie called that, but it's really bad because he's 30 years old and he had 10 career home runs coming into the year. When did Tommy La Stella ever have his groove before this?
Do I need to look up his college stats? Because they were probably
pretty good. He may have had a good year in college once. That's probably how he got drafted.
I don't know if he even went to college. But
no, yeah. I think if you look at what Tommy La Stella has done early in the year, the strikeout rate is just ridiculously good. The hard contact rate is at least acceptable now. It's improved. His average exit velocity is actually above average for the first time in several years. But as I just said, he's a 30-year-old and it's 100 batted balls this season. And he's still probably not going to play against lefties moving forward. I have a really, really, really hard time believing Tommy La Stella is going to be anywhere close to this good. If you picked him up and have rode the hot streak, great job, because you saw the hot streak coming. But I don't expect it's going to last.
Two things. In what looks like the most homer-friendly environment in Major League history, it stands to reason that certain players who weren't power hitters before will become power hitters, especially when it's one who seems to have made a conscious effort to hit more fly balls. Two, even after going 9-for-15 in his past three games, La Stella only has a .245 BABIP. So when the power pace does slow, and it stands to reason it will, there are other things he's going to excel at. He's mentioned the insanely low strikeout rate, and he's always been a really good contact hitter, La Stella has. So he's going to him to be like roster everywhere, he's going to have to play more than he has. He's going to have to start against more left-handers. But you know, if he stays hot, that seems inevitable.
I will just say, like, 12% of his career plate appearances have come this year already. He didn't have that much of a body of work. He has a 310 ISO this year. He has a 126 ISO for his career.
It's amazing what's going on. Would you rather have DJ LeMahieu or Tommy La Stella?
LeMahieu.
Yeah, I mean, LeMahieu, but I think La Stella... I think there's a lot of similarities between what I envision La Stella being and LeMahieu.
Would you rather have Derek Dietrich or Tommy La Stella?
La Stella.
Stella, I guess.
Okay. Let's do some news and notes here. And we'll come back after. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about buy low, sell high, and buy high. But here are your news and notes. Miguel Andujar out for the season. Torn labrum in his shoulder. Mitch Garcia is back. You know, people want to hear about Dynasty, though. So let me just go back to Andujar. Do you think he's going to be... is he going to be the kind of guy we talk about? Hey, remember when that guy Miguel Andujar had that good rookie season? Or is he... You think so? You don't think he's going to be...
That's a confident response.
Yeah.
I think it's certainly plausible.
Right. The arrow's pointing down, but...
I would bet against it. It's just he already has that huge defensive hurdle to overcome. So if he's not, you know, he's not going to be afforded as much patience as somebody who we would have considered at his level and in fantasy might be.
Okay. Now Mitch Garver is on the IL and Miguel Sano is back and Jason Castro replaced Garver and he homered yesterday. But Sano... How owned should he be, Heath, on the ownometer, Miguel Sano?
40%? Okay. I imagine rostering him in a points league, but in most leagues where I need a corner infielder, I'm probably trying to, just in case. I mean, there's still enormous potential there. It's just whether he can stay healthy and stay on task.
Zach Greinke left with abdominal tightness. He doesn't think it's a big deal, but... You know, it might be. David Peralta left with back tightness. Edwin Jackson has set a major league record. He played for his 14th team yesterday. He pitched pretty well for Toronto. We're not interested in him. Atlanta recalled Tuki Toussaint. Toussaint is going to mostly pitch out of the bullpen. Trevor Story, Scott mentioned it. He left after a collision in the field. He hopes to play tomorrow, though. He thinks he dodged a bullet there. Same with Yandy Diaz. Diaz left with ankle discomfort, and he's... apparently just day-to-day. Taijuan Walker had a setback in his rehab. He has shoulder discomfort. And let's see, David Peralta. Did I mention this one yet? Yes, I did. Sorry.
Yep.
He's out. He left the game. Jesus Luzardo, Scott talked about him. He threw a bullpen session. Anthony Rizzo sat again. The Angels... Oh, I didn't talk about this one. The Angels called up Jared Walsh, who plays first base and relief pitcher. So that's interesting. I think they sent Justin Bour down. Jared Walsh, Scott, any interest in him for the Angels?
He looks like a good power bat. Homer 29 times last year and obviously less time than a player would see in a major league season. It's a good home run total for the minors and had 10 already this year. And looks like he's going to be given a chance. Strikes out a lot. So, you know, at first base, I would bet against him being... standard mixed league relevant, but there's a path to that.
And how about San Francisco starter Sean Anderson, who made his major league debut yesterday? And remember when I said Anthony DeSclafani was from Coral Springs, Florida, and I was completely wrong? I was like 1,000 miles off. Sean Anderson is from my hometown. Should I add him in all of my leagues? Mustache guy for me? No?
Okay. No.
Okay, good.
No. I don't see a lot to get excited about there.
Justin Upton has begun baseball activities. Brandon Belt hopes to return tomorrow. Chase Anderson's coming off the IL this weekend for Milwaukee, and Freddy Peralta is going to the bullpen. Gabe Kapler said Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. He is a smart man and a great person and manager. The Marlins are batting 200 with runners in scoring position this season, and Nelson Cruz was available off the bench. And those are your news and notes. We're coming right back with Buy Low, Sell High, and Buy High on Fantasy Baseball Today. We will also talk about... Have you heard that one, Heath? Were you here for the Mike Soroka thing?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't gone that long.
I don't know. I don't remember when we did that. We'll talk about the crappy Chris Archer and Robinson Cano, the very good Patrick Corbin, the slumping David Dahl and Ozzie Albies, all that right after this break on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Need to make some trades right now. Help me out, guys. Buy low, sell high, buy high. Scott White, who are we buying low on?
I think Chris Archer's a decent buy low, just from the standpoint that he's getting a lot of negative publicity right now beyond just the performance. It's, you know, that trade where the Pirates gave up Glass now and
Meadows.
Austin Meadows. It's looking like a joke, and that's making Archer a joke. And I think his owner would be happy to be rid of him. Because of it. So I think it's a genuine, like, you wouldn't have to give up much to get Chris Archer right now. And I mean, yeah, it was just a few starts ago we were looking, well, what a good start Chris Archer's off to. He still misses a lot of bats, obviously has a favorable track record.
Does he?
And the fact that it is hard to find a worthwhile starting pitcher anywhere. I think it's a good opportunity. Yes, of course
he has
a favorable track record. Adam,
No, but he doesn't.
There's more to fantasy success than ERA.
You're right. There's a lot more to it. He's never won more than 12 games. He has a WHIP over 1.24 every year and an ERA over 4. What a great track record. His great track record was in 2014.
He's had good record.
And 15.
I mean, look at his point totals year by year. Things
have changed.
Last year, he had been a consistent high ranker in fantasy.
Two of the last 3 years, he has been outside the top 30 while throwing 200.
Oh, no, not the top 30.
That's a big deal.
I can't roster him. I play in a league where only 30 pitchers are rostered.
Look, Mr. Scott White, Mr. Sarcasm. This guy is giving you a bad ERA and a subpar WHIP over 200 innings. That means he's hurting you more than a guy who's giving you a bad ERA in 100 innings. And you know what? Like,
okay,
that's exactly how it works. I mean, if you get a 4 ERA from a guy for 200 innings, that's bad. That's worse than getting a 4 ERA for 100 innings, obviously.
Is this just as simple as one of you arguing points and one of you arguing categories?
Maybe.
No, because how high did he rank in categories league?
When? Let me tell you.
Bad win-loss luck doesn't mean we should assume he will forever. And when you look at his FIPs, so
when you have a 4 ERA,
he's good.
When you have a 4 ERA,
by the way, if for all these points you're bringing up, he wouldn't be as good of a buy low. So you can buy even lower now because of people like Adam Azer.
When you have a 4 ERA, you don't have bad win loss luck. You are not a good pitcher. You're giving up too many runs. Like, I don't
pitch.
Yeah,
you're throwing the innings he does. In the offensive environment we're seeing now, he should have more wins than he did.
He also has been hurt now two straight years. 2016, he was 37th in points, 34th in Roto. 2017, he was 17th in points, 25th in Roto. And last year, he was just bad. Last year, he only threw 148 and a third innings.
Because if you're prepared to drop Chris Archer, then I guess you don't need to make a trade. You can just wait out the dropping of Chris Archer and pick him up.
No, I wouldn't drop Chris Archer. In fact, I would buy low on Chris Archer. I just don't think he's that good. What'd you say?
Okay, so I present him as a buy low.
Yeah.
I think Darker now, and you're like, no, you shouldn't buy low.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
He didn't say that.
Not gonna
I didn't say that. I said he doesn't have a good track. I think you overrate his track record. That's all. Like, we ignore the facts because he pitches a lot of innings. Like, his innings aren't that good, but I still think he could be a better pitcher. I mean, I think if you look at Chris Archer this year, I think you have to look at the thumb injury as a reason why he struggled before he went on the IL. And you look at one start coming off the IL, we always give pitchers a little bit of leeway in their first start back. And he was pitching pretty well at the beginning of the year. I still, all the arguments I made for Chris, we made for Archer at the beginning of the season hold true. Getting out of the AL East should really help him. I think he's a buy low also. I just think that you've sort of overlooked the last 3 years of his career.
I don't know how you point to a guy, oh, look, he's always around the top 30 pitcher with reasons to think there's more upside and say that's a bad track record. I don't get that.
Because when you are around the top 30 at a position and you have, because Scott, you are always the guy who's on a per game basis, on a per game basis, on a per game basis, and you forget about that with Chris Archer. He throws more innings than most people, and he can't finish in the top 20 because he's not that good, or he hasn't been. I think he can be better with the Pirates than he was with the Rays, but my argument is about the past with Archer, not about the future. But like, that's what, like, you are inconsistent when you talk about Archer, because it's always per game, per game, per game, per game, except with this guy, for whatever reason, you just overlook it. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Okay. Heath, who should we buy low on?
I don't think anybody will argue with this one, so we can move through it quickly. But Max Scherzer, yes, everyone still knows that he's good, but he's got a 3.64 ERA. He's 2-4. There might be someone out there who doesn't think he's the best pitcher in baseball anymore. I still think he's the best pitcher in baseball. I would trade any other starting pitcher for him. He has just been a little bit unlucky at the start of the year. You look at his peripherals, his FIP 2.24 is better than any other year in his career. His xFIP 2.74, better than any other year in his career. It's been a bad strand rate, 69%, and a high BABIP, 361 against. But other than that, he has been fantastic. His control's actually been better this year than it's been the last three. The strikeouts still almost 12 Ks per nine. Trade anyone for Max Scherzer.
Yeah, I almost traded Mike Trout for Max Scherzer with other pieces. I decided not to, but my argument, I talked about it yesterday at the end of the show, is that if you know, when you go into a season, you value Trout over Scherzer because Trout is in his mid-20s and Scherzer's older. But if you knew you were going to get a regular 215-inning season from Scherzer, I think there's an argument that he's the most valuable player in fantasy. I don't think giving up Trout is ridiculous for him if you need pitching and not hitting. I mean, I didn't do the trade, but I think we've seen from Scherzer, he's still Max Scherzer is my point.
And there's still a decent chance Max Scherzer scores more fantasy points than anyone this year, and we know Mike Trout's not going to.
It's a roto league, but yes. Sell high, Heath, why don't you give us a sell high?
Was that a joke? We know Mike Trout's not going to?
Yes, it was the joke about how he never actually finishes number one.
Okay, all right.
I hate to do this.
Scott's
I kind of don't
today.
Hate to do it, but it's because it's really on brand. But I'm just going to say it. Javier Baez is not going to be this good. He's striking out even more than he did last year. He's got a 407 BABIP and like a 30% home run to fly ball ratio. He's eligible at second base, third base, and shortstop, so it should be easy to find someone who has a place to plug him in. Shouldn't be that difficult to find someone who says, you guys were dumb. You thought Javier Baez was going to be a bust and now wants to acquire him. Javier Baez is a sell high candidate.
Okay.
But he's not a bust. So we were dumb. Right?
Yeah. Right.
We weren't actually dumb for saying, oh, this highly drafted player has some red flags that might want to make you target some other highly drafted
player. I think he has all of the same red flags still.
Yeah, but the biggest red flags were, look at how high the BABIP is, look at how high the home run to fly ball ratio is. And now that he's doing that again, I they are higher than even last year, and so that's going to come down some, but I think there's enough evidence in his track record that he could just be the guy who has a high BABIP and a high home run to fly ball rate.
Yes, but he could lose 60 points off his BABIP, be at his career mark, and be 40 points higher than league average still.
Oh, okay, so to put it in perspective, if you were trading Javier Baez, what would you be looking for? And I guess the best way to frame it maybe is, if you were drafting again today, we weren't taking Baez until like the third round. We thought people were crazy for taking him maybe at the end of the first or early in the second round in a 12-team league. If you were drafting again today, when would you draft Javier Baez?
Third round.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Yeah.
I think in a roto league where the plate discipline doesn't have any negative impact, I feel like he's a second round pick. You don't think so?
I don't. And part of it's because, and I'm still not sure exactly how to adjust for this when the actual draft comes, but it's been a couple years in a row where I do the trade chart on CBS Sports and I alternate head-to-head points versus Roto every week. So I'm kind of re-ranking the top 200, top 250 every single week. So it's kind of like doing a draft in the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. And the last 2 years, the high-end starting pitchers move up and up and up as the season goes on.
Yeah.
Just because they're so hard to replace. And I wonder why aren't we drafting that way if that's the case. But then when draft day comes, I don't want to draft that way either. So I don't know. But it my point being, it pushes Baez out of that range, if nothing else.
I think the starting pitchers are sort of like running backs, where you go into the year with some concerns. You know that these guys get hurt a lot. And then when you see it at the beginning of the year, you get a little bit more confidence in it, and then you push them up. And if you were redrafting, they'd go earlier than they did on draft day, which is sort of like what I was saying with Max Scherzer. So, but obviously he was going really high, but I just think he's if you had any doubts about him, he's clearly delivered and silenced them. Scott, who's a sell high for you?
Alex Gordon, who, is somebody we've talked about a lot in this respect, but I still don't really get why he's been so successful. There hasn't really been a coming down to earth. His numbers in May are just as strong as they were at the start of the year. The one thing he is definitely doing better is making more contact, but it doesn't explain why there's this power resurgence he has. And maybe it's a situation where a better offense environment, like I said, for Tommy La Stella, like somebody has to feel that in a more significant way. But I would bet against it being Gordon in his mid-30s having this big resurgence season.
Okay, so we said buy low on Chris Archer unanimously. who's your buy low, Heath? I apologize. Oh, Max Scherzer. And sell high on Javier Baez and Alex Gordon. Let's get quickly, guys, buy high. Heath, give me a buy high.
I was going to say Michael Brantley. I don't know if we've said Michael Brantley's name enough this season. His 150-game pace right now is like 330 with 35 home runs and 110 RBI. He's been awesome. Still not striking out. More barrels than any point in the last 5 years. He's a top 12 outfielder in points.
Michael Brantley for Heath. How about you, Scott? Buy high.
I almost put Brantley too, but ended up going with Hyunjin Ryu instead because there's nothing I want to buy more on than starting pitching. And he has been one of the best in unexpected way. The fact that he is pitching so many innings, and look, I mean, he's equipped to do it. He's such an efficient pitcher, such a low walk rate. I'm just surprised the Dodgers are letting him. But that's a game changer for me in terms of his value, and somebody who I think. You always got to worry about the injury with him, but really excited. I'd be really excited if I could find a way to get him on my roster right now.
Okay, if we were going to name the three players who spark the most anger amongst us on the show, Archer's definitely one of them. I think I know the other two. Who do you guys think? Like, their name comes up and chaos ensues.
That's Herman a good Marquez? Question.
Maybe I don't think so.
Rick Porcello. Okay.
So it's always always. I think it's always me that's at the center of it. Like I always or. Okay, for me, I'm thinking it's Archer for sure. Matt Carpenter, and Carlos Santana are the three that seem to. And Carpenter and Archer are sort of in a class of their own. They just get
well, Carlos Santana certainly has one instance, though.
yeah.
There was quite a McCutcheon Brand there for a while.
McCutcheon, great. We're going to talk about McCutcheon. He stinks. That's a teaser. He doesn't stink, but he stinks lately. We'll talk about him when we come back. Is he overowned? That's coming up next. Actually, no, he's in the slumping section. But also, is he overowned? Right after this on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Okay, here we go. A lot to get to. Let's start with an overowned section. I had Chris Archer in here. I will remove him. But I will ask you, will you start Chris Archer next week in a two-start week against the Rockies and the Dodgers at home?
Yep.
Only in a points league. Did you say no, Heath?
I said yes.
Oh, okay. Cool.
All right.
Cool.
Let's start
an ally
with Robinson Cano. He is 33rd in points, 42nd in Roto. What really concerns me with Cano is he is batting 119 without an extra base hit against lefties. And that 2 years ago, he had kind of a down year, still finished as a top 10 second baseman. But in that year, he really struggled with lefties. It was uncharacteristic. It's happening again this year. Robinson Cano at 92%. Could you see a scenario where you're dropping him? Is he overowned?
Yeah.
I mean, certainly the fact that he's a second baseman, I think, buys him, you know, he has more cushion. And I mean, obviously his track record does too. But it's a concerning age to be exhibiting some of the signs he is, strikeout rate being up too, as well as the, you know, a lot of times when a player starts to struggle against a certain handedness of pitcher, it's a sign of age. So, you know, I've counted out Cano so many times in recent years that I'm reluctant to do it again. But you know, if he's your second baseman, obviously you want an upgrade right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying people should go try to drop him or pick up Tommy La Stella to start over him. But I do think that there's a situation in a points league especially where you just picked up another second baseman and that's who you're starting and you're not going to keep him on your bench.
Okay, Adam Jones is 81% owned. I'm sorry, Scott. He's hit three home runs in his last
I was just
going to
say I'd be starting La Stella over him right now, personally.
Okay, makes sense. Okay, Adam Jones, 81% owned. He does have a career-high hard contact rate. This was an easier case to make a few days ago, but Jones, three home runs in his last four games. I phrase this as like, okay, he's 81% owned. I almost look at the guys, other than Cano, the rest of the guys on the list, like, how droppable are they? In fact, in the interest of speeding up the show and getting to more things, I'll just give the last four guys on the list. Adam Jones, Adam Eaton, five guys. Jones, Eaton, Buxton, Winker, and Colton Wong. They're all owned in 69 to 81% of leagues. And prospect gets called up. Two-star pitcher and you need a win. Somebody really exciting for you on waivers. Jones, Adam Eaton, Byron Buxton, Jesse Winker, Colton Wong. Who would you consider droppable in that group?
Wong and Eaton are the most droppable for me, though I am getting a little concerned about Jesse Winker because the Reds DFA'd Matt Kemp and Winker has only lost playing time since then, which is Derek Dietrich's fault. And I don't think it'll ultimately last, but in a shallow league scenario, I think we're back to maybe dropping Winker.
Well, and in fairness, Winker's... Like, so I think he's done some of that himself as well. He's, other than a really fortunate home run to fly ball ratio, the production's just been completely absent. So Wong is easily the most droppable. I don't really want to drop the rest of these guys. but I don't know that I would not call any of them must have either.
I feel like I'm done with Adam Eaton. I mean, in any league that's even fairly shallow and has a waiver wire, he has no power. I cannot believe how he's got to be like one of the lightest hitting players in baseball now. It's crazy. It's not like he was ever a home run hitter, but his ISO is 110, and last year it was really low too. Like it's alarming. I don't get it. And then Buxton, you know, I understand if you need the steals, he's got 8 of them, but he bats 9th,
yeah,
which is a killer in points leagues, and he's not really doing anything else, although he did homer yesterday. Okay.
Yeah, he is striking out a lot less, though, and he is hitting a lot of fly ball. His home run to fly ball rate is comically low, and he finally did hit his second home run yesterday. I could see in a points league maybe dropping Buxton just because 3 outfield spots to fill, and that's not really his best format anyway. But I think better days are ahead for him.
All right. Okay, steals alert. Good stuff here. Ronald Acuna stole 2 bases. He has been running since he moved to the leadoff spot, so that's potentially really big. Scott, you think he stays in the leadoff spot, or is this a fluid situation for Acuna?
I think Austin Riley's arrival helped. You get another power bat behind all those high OBP guys at the top of the lineup. It makes it easier to justify. Now Riley obviously has to perform, but I think there's a good chance he does. And if Acuna gets hot with this move to this spot, it'll be harder for Brian Snitker to justify removing him from it.
Okay, how about also Lorenzo Cain in the steals alert? Cain has attempted a stolen base in 3 straight games. He's 2 for 3, and he wasn't really running before. He's hopefully coming out of it. He's been kind of cold. But Kane has stolen 26 to 30 bases in 4 of his last 5 seasons, and now I believe he has 5. Yeah, he has 5 this year. Slump alert. I will give you some slumping hitters. You tell me who you're concerned about, if any. Pete Alonso, his last 19 games, he has a 651 OPS, and obviously he strikes out a lot. That's nothing new. Andrew McCutchen. So I had him as the number 32 outfielder in points leagues and number 60 in Roto going into Wednesday. He's probably didn't change much. So Roto, you know, that's not an OBP Roto. That's a batting average Roto league. Andrew McCutchen's been slumping last 20 games, batting 197, 557 OPS, still getting on base though. David Dahl. Yeah, he just, like, the overall numbers look pretty good, but a ton of strikeouts and hasn't really been that good since coming off the IL. And Ozzie Albies is the last guy. Top 10 second baseman, 7th in points, 10th in Roto. But so much of it for Albies was a 6-game stretch with 4 home runs in late April. Since then, he's been pretty bad in May. He's batting 194 with a 513 OPS, and he got off to a slow start. So again, the 4 names are Pete Alonso, Andrew McCutchen, David Dahl, and Ozzie Albies. Heath, do you have concerns about those guys?
I don't really have concerns about McCutchen. He's going to be better in points than Roto. He's gone through a cold stretch. I expect a hot stretch is coming. I think Pete Alonso is going to be awesome. I'm a little bit more concerned about him just because the limited track record against big league pitching, when a guy starts off really hot and then goes through that cold streak, you wonder if it's the league making some sort of an adjustment. He's also had a little bit of bad luck. Dahl's kind of concerning because I think he leads baseball in BABIP and is hitting below 300. If you're at a 450 BABIP or something, you should probably have an absurd batting average, and the power hasn't really been that impressive yet. And then Albies, I think he just is what he is.
Dahl is batting 298. The power has been doubles, and the doubles have been annoying because it's taken away his steals opportunities. He has 11 doubles and 2 triples in 34 games. That's pretty good. And he's got a 557 slugging percentage at home, and he's been, you know, not very good on the road. He sits sometimes against lefties, even though he's not bad against lefties, so that's annoying. Scott, you want to have a take on Alonso, McCutchen, Dahl, or Albies?
I think the most concerning about whether he's going to live up to our expectations for him is David Dahl, because he's losing playing time, and most of his success has been BABIP dependent, really high BABIP. He hasn't hit for the power we expected him to. So he's been the only real faller in my rankings of these 4.
Okay. I mean, just to stay on it a little bit, Heath, you're not worried about McCutchen. Why?
He's just, his track record is long enough, and he's going to go through hot streaks and cold streaks, and I'm just not worried about him. Okay. What would I be worried about?
Andrew McCutchen might be the 4th player on the aggravation list. on this podcast. I think, you know, look, he's older. I don't think he's a very good hitter anymore. I think he's a very good on-base guy. And I think the only thing saving him is that he bats leadoff in a good lineup. But it is saving. I mean, it is, as long as he's not crap season, then he's probably, McCutcheon's probably a good buy-low player because he's got that safety net built in of batting leadoff for the Phillies. I mean, and getting
he's got a career high walk rate. He's striking out about the same rate he has the last 3 years. I'm just not concerned.
Scott, do you want to jump in?
And I think expectations might have something to do with it too, because I don't see him as more than a top 30 outfielder now, you know, at best. That's like the upside of McCutcheon at this point. It's not like I'm talking about him in a potential top 15 sense or anything like that.
So I think that McCutcheon's upside in a roto league, especially a batting average roto league, I completely agree, Scott. But in a points league, I would expect him to be near the top 15. I think I looked at where it was yesterday. Top 15 in plate appearances. Obviously, he's going to walk a lot. He should score runs. So I think he could be the kind of player who shows up as like the 12th best outfielder in points leagues, even though it didn't really feel that way.
Oh, yeah. Nick Markakis did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could happen. It would take other players falling short of expectations too. But yeah, it could happen just if he stays healthy. That would be a per game versus overall.
Yeah, right.
Point scores. And I like you brought up for Archer.
So who would you rather have?
Thing, huh?
Right. Who would you rather have rest of season? Andrew McCutcheon or Aaron Hicks fresh off the IL?
McCutcheon.
Yeah, though I do think Hicks has more upside. I'm excited that he's back.
Who would you rather have rest of season, Gleyber Torres or Ozzie Albies?
Gleyber.
Really?
I would rather have Albies. I'm kind of surprised Heath said that. He's always been the Gleyber detractor.
Heath, wait.
I've kind of been the Albies detractor too, though. I don't like the Yankees or the Braves.
Heath, you need to do a rankings update because Albies is
I need to do a rankings update. I've been gone for a week. Come on.
But Albies is fourth, but Torres is sixth, actually, at second base. Boy, you must really hate second base. So you wouldn't like, you, are you going to move Nick Senzel, Daniel Murphy, Mike Moustakas, Keston Hira, like anybody like that ahead of Torres and Albies?
I don't imagine I am.
Okay. More from yesterday. Kenta Maeda. Oh, here's the good rotation. Good rotation and bad rotation. Kenta Maeda, Mike Soroka, Mike Minor. Oh, yeah, I don't think I should have put Mike Minor in the good rotation. He's in the okay rotation. But for the sake of simplicity, Maeda, 6 2/3 scoreless with 12 strikeouts. Soroka, 7 scoreless with only 3 strikeouts. Mike Minor, 5 innings, 1 run, but 8 hits and 3 strikeouts at Kansas City. Scott, give me some takes on Maeda, Soroka, and Minor.
Well, it's a really interesting group because I think it's a really polarizing group. There are reasons you could love them. There are reasons you could hate them. I have been a little underwhelmed by Soroka recently. He has 7 strikeouts to 6 walks over 13 innings in his last 2 starts. Neither of those ratios are good, yet he succeeded in spite of it, in part because he has this elite Dallas Keuchel-like ground ball rate. Not sure how sustainable that is. Not sure I obviously wouldn't consider dropping Soroka or anything given the state of starting pitching, but I wonder if he might be a sell high guy. Kenta Maeda has good ratios this year, but I feel like the impact has been low because he's been so limited in terms of innings and pitch counts. This was clearly his best start of the season and a great swinging strike rate. He had 22 swinging strikes in this, but I've been a little underwhelmed overall. And then Mike Minor, his last 2 starts weren't bad, but they weren't. He didn't really do what he was doing earlier that got us excited in terms of pitching deep into games, missing a lot of bats. Is it just kind of a rough patch, or is it a coming back down to earth? And since it's not like he was a bad start in either case. Should we care that much? I think that's a fair question to ask, too.
Yeah, and for Minor, I mean, I could certainly forgive 5 innings, 3 runs, 5 strikeouts at Houston, you know, whatever. it was disappointing that he didn't do better against the Royals. But the Royals also don't have a terrible lineup. I think they're middle of the pack. How would you guys rank Maeda, Soroka, and Minor? Scott, then Heath.
I would rank them Minor, Soroka, and Maeda last.
Wow. Heath?
I think I may have that completely flipped.
Figured.
I'm looking forward to you looking at my rankings while I tell you and then telling me that I need to do a rankings update. I think right now today I'd go Soroka, Maeda, Minor.
Okay. Bad rotation. Heath, I'll get your take on these guys. Eduardo Rodriguez. You know, this actually was a pretty good start for... He went six innings. He gave up, I think, two runs. Then he came out in the seventh, gave up three runs without recording an out. So it ends up being five runs in six innings with one walk to 10 strikeouts against Colorado for Eduardo Rodriguez. Herman Marquez was surprisingly bad on the road, even at Boston. I was surprised. Jay Happ just hasn't been very good this year. He's been really terrible at home. He's giving up a lot of home runs at home. Opponents are hitting 277 against him at home, which is actually pretty high, 188 in three road starts. That's Jay Happ. We also have Jake Odorizzi, who disappointed against the Angels, and Jake Arrieta, who, look, he's in a rough stretch right now. His last four starts, 15 earned runs in 22 innings. He had rough stretch like this twice last year. His overall numbers were not terrible last year, but I know we don't love Jake Arrieta. All of these guys are owned in 90% of leagues or more. Eduardo Rodriguez, Herman Marquez, Jay Happ, Jake Odorizzi, and Jake Arrieta. Heath, do you see anyone there that you think should not be owned in the vast majority of leagues?
Yeah, I mean, I think all these guys, like, first off, we shouldn't put all these guys in the same category. I've been a bit of a Herman Marquez doubter, and some of the things I was afraid of have come to fruition this year, but he is head and shoulders and waist and knees and ankles and everything ahead of this group of starting pitchers.
Correct.
So I would not put any of these four in the same breath, other than the fact that they were not particularly good in their most recent start. So yes, Marquez should be owned everywhere. He should be started everywhere. I'm probably even starting him at home. He's a top 30 starting pitcher.
Okay.
After that, I get really wishy-washy about just about everyone in this group. Arrieta got off to a good start. We didn't really believe it. I think I definitely still like him more than Odorizzi. I think Rodriguez is kind of in that same boat, except he went the opposite way. And Happ has just been underwhelming for the most part.
So... would you drop any of them for a hot prospect or something like that?
I would. Yeah, I don't believe I have owned Jake Odorizzi on any team this season. And he's been available from time to time, maybe as a two-start pitcher. I just think Jake Odorizzi is a streamer.
He is next week as a two-start pitcher, though, at the Angels and home against the White Sox. So you might want to hang on to him a little bit longer. Scott, you want to weigh in here?
The only one... The only two from that group who I am beholden to, I feel like, are Marquez and Eduardo Rodriguez, who I am kind of excited about. He has expanded his arsenal in a way that has made him even more of a bat misser, had a season-high 20 swinging strikes in this one, even though it wasn't a great result overall. I think there are a lot of reasons to be encouraged by his performance, and I would consider him must-own.
Serious question. Would you rather own Eduardo Rodriguez or Chris Archer?
I'd rather own Chris Archer.
Yeah. Yeah. There's Marquez, and there's a gap, then there's Archer, and there's a gap, then there's everyone else on that list.
I like what we're seeing from Eduardo Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. I'm with Scott. I think his numbers are misleading. I still have concerns about whether or not he can go more than six innings, and that came to fruition yesterday, where he was terrible in the seventh. And it's just been his track record. He's a 5-6 inning guy, but it seemed like he was making some strides this year. And then Jay Happ, jeez, man. Like Jay Happ, it's just tough to ignore the last 3 years. He's been a pretty reliable pitcher. You know, I'm looking for buy lows here. Does anybody think Jay Happ's a buy low?
I don't think he's a buy low, no.
What the hell is so funny?
If he was on my team, I'd be moving him off my roster. Moving him off my roster. Just no, he's fine. Whatever.
What is happening, Scott?
I don't know if I have to jump off this. Clearly, my house is coming apart behind.
That is terrific. Scott, there's a couch being lifted up in the air behind Scott White. This is awesome. You better be watching our show, by the way. It's fun to watch us. Okay, all right. Fringy starting pitchers. You want any of these guys? Andrew Cashner, he's the last, but he had a good start yesterday. Sonny Gray.
No.
Gio Gonzalez and Matt Strom. I want Matt Strom, 75% own.
Yeah, and Gray's okay. I have no interest whatsoever in Andrew Cashner. Strom's actually, like, he hasn't quite done it in the way that we were hoping he would do it coming into this year. But I think if you look since his first start of the season, he's really had an impressive stretch.
Yep.
And I know that Scott was doubting him because the swinging strikes weren't there in the year. They've come back a little bit. I think Strom's pretty close to must own.
Yeah. I wouldn't put him that high, but
RP eligible.
He has been better than my fears suggested he would.
I don't get Sonny Gray.
He hasn't given up more than two runs in a start since his first start of the season.
Yeah.
It's like seven straight starts.
I know, but I don't totally believe the way he's doing it. And I'm not saying you shouldn't own him. I just think his must-own's a little strong. I don't have a lot of faith in the way he's performing.
He has 26 strikeouts in his last 23 innings. The strikeouts have been there.
Yeah. He has 35 strikeouts in his last 36 and a third over his last six starts. Matt Strom, 2.23 ERA. Would you drop Jake Odorizzi or Jay Happ or Jake Arrieta? Or anyone who begins with J for Matt Strom.
Odorizzi for sure.
Okay.
I would not drop any of them, no.
In the bullpen, Diego Castillo. He actually has the last three saves for Tampa Bay, and he's 36% owned. They are a great team that hasn't had a lot of saves lately. Go figure. But Diego Castillo, 36% owned. He's been very good. Josh Hader. Still appears to be the closer. He's got 11 saves. Jeremy Jeffress pitched in the 6th and 7th innings yesterday. Hector Neris made an appearance. That was nice. He was trailing 5-2 in the 9th, but he played. Second appearance in 12 days. Matt Barnes came in with the bases loaded and nobody out in the 7th inning. So they used him in a high-leverage situation, Matt Barnes. Luke Jackson is clearly the guy, and he's 60% owned. He had another 2-inning save. And then we have Mike Morin, who got a save for the Twins, with Blake Parker getting it out in the 8th inning. I think what happened here, Blake Parker got an out in the 8th inning, and again, I think a high-leverage situation. It was a 1-run game at the time, and then... No, it was a 4-run game at the time. Then he did not come out to pitch the 9th. Hildenberger came in a 4-run game, gave up 3 runs, and then Morin came in and got the save. He gave up some of Hildenberger's runs. Hildenberger got optioned after the game. I think Blake Parker is still the guy there, no question. But... Let's talk about Diego Castillo. Like, do you think he's under-owned at 36%?
I don't. Well, maybe a little. Okay, maybe a little. He's clearly the guy to own from the Rays bullpen, I think. But I don't think they're in any way leaning away from a committee situation there between him, Emilio Pagan, and Jose Alvarado. So I think the saves pace is like in a head-to-head context where you're only starting two relievers. I don't even think he's really a consideration for you. Now, if it's more of a categories context, then just by ratios he is, and all three of them are by ratios. But I don't expect any of them to get 20 saves this year.
And deep leagues, Heath, let me run through this list. Tell me if you have any interest in these guys who are owned in no more than 16% of leagues. We already talked about San Francisco starting pitcher Sean Anderson, Cubs second baseman Addison Russell, Minnesota catcher Jason Castro, Mets third baseman J.D. Davis, who started for the last 5 games, Texas infielder Logan Forsyth, who figures to get more playing time with Elvis Andrews on the IL, and Houston second baseman Aledmys Diaz, 7-for-18 with 3 home runs in his last 5 games with Altuve on the IL. Did I say anything that jumps out?
The one I would say that over the rest of the season I think probably needs to be owned in more leagues is going to be Russell. I would guess he's going to need to be owned in closer to like a third of leagues by the time it's all said and done.
Okay. Now, we have Ben Zobrist out on personal leave, so I don't know what the playing time will be like, but right now Russell is playing, I think, pretty much every day. He's 8% owned. did not get to Domingo Herman or Patrick Corbin or Zach Greinke, and hopefully we don't know that Zach. Hopefully we don't see Zach Greinke on the IL tomorrow. But I'll try to talk about at least Herman because he's the number four starting pitcher in fantasy. So we should probably talk about him. He has had the easiest schedule base, but he's good. He's very good. So, all right, fine. We'll talk about Domingo Herman tomorrow. Please remind me. Thank you for listening, everybody. Much appreciated. Make sure you check out our coverage of the PGA Championship on CBS Sports HQ, the Cannell and Bell podcast. I believe they are live from Bethpage, and then for on HQ, and then you'll hear the podcast on demand. So we have great stuff this week for golf, and make sure you're watching CBS Sports HQ. For Heath Cummings and Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. We'll talk to you Friday at Kokomo Friday coming up on Fantasy Baseball Today.